This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
T.O. Greyhawk.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to The Next Generation. I'm your host, Amy Nelson. Joined with me today, as they always are, Richard Marquez and Justin Ozer. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Fantastic.
Very good. And Justin, yourself?
I'm doing good. Welcome back, Amy. We missed you last week, but we still had a fun little show with Haley Stotter from Standard Orbit.
Yes.
Good to have you back.
Oh, again, missing those badass moments. That's okay.
Yes, badass Troy moments. You will be there. Maybe that'll be the next one we'll do.
Well, gosh, we're recording this on daylight savings time, and I feel like I have been up all day. Oh my gosh. It's messing with me.
Up all day. I got an extra hour of sleep.
Yeah, so did I.
My body still likes to wake up in the morning, and I'm like, wait a minute. No.
Yeah, I woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, oh man. I'm like, you know, that restless feeling. You're like, you know, but I was like, oh, no, one more hour of sleep. I'm going back to bed.
Yep. About the same thing happened to me.
Yeah. Well, we have some Babel conference feedback from our 250th episode where we did our role-playing game. So, Justin, why don't you start us off?
Yeah. I mean, first, thanks, everyone, for your feedback. Glad you enjoyed that role-playing game. We weren't sure what would happen, but I think it turned out well. So first we have Wes Huntington, and before he listened to it, he said, pre-listening prediction, Amy's character dies, Justin's character survives and is promoted. And then after he listened to the episode, he said, this was a fun listen. Next time, make the entire thing up. Keep the dice, of course. It should be fun to actually use your imaginations, and maybe it would be cool. My own 2 cents, I'm grateful that my pre-listening prediction did not come true. Poor Miguel Marquez, though. And so Marquez, we hardly knew thee. So thanks for that. And yes, I'm glad that Amy's character didn't die. And spoilers, if listeners haven't heard the episode for the role-playing game, my character died but was brought back to life. Thank goodness. Thank you, Q.
Yes.
Yes. And we're glad that you enjoyed it. And as Richard commented on the Babel conference, maybe we'll have a follow-up in the future, right?
Absolutely. But that's under wraps right now.
Yep. Well, we'll let you know when there's another one, but definitely we're thinking about it because we're glad you guys really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because we enjoyed doing it. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. After we got over our initial awkwardness.
Yeah.
We'll be more pros next time. Yeah. Right?
So Jen Foley said, I did not know this game existed. My husband plays D&D and has been trying to get me to play for years. Maybe this could be a compromise. Absolutely. It should be a compromise.
It should be, and I hope you have fun doing it. Actually, I know Jen also from some Facebook Star Trek books groups. I'm glad she's joined us and listening to Earl Grey. And if you happen to play that with your husband as a compromise, if you play Star Trek Adventures, let us know how it goes. I'm sure you guys will have fun, though. It's a fun game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Christopher Lutz says, that was great. I personally never have tried any RPG, although I want to badly. I'll admit, when you didn't evade those blasts from the Romulans while headed to the surface, I was sure you wouldn't make it off the shuttlecraft. How much of the dialogue comes from the game material? The encounter with the Maquis, for instance. Is it like a choose-your-own-adventure book, or were you making up most of what your characters were saying? Richard?
So I actually I already responded back to Chris, but like, so the story that I chose was the very first one that Mobius, which is the, is it Mobius?
Mophidius.
There you go. Every time I see it, I think Mobius. Yeah. So, it was basically their first story, and I mean, instead of like creating this big story and everything, I was like, you know what, let's just go with what they have and see how it goes, sort of thing. So for the most part, it was basically an outline. I mean, if you look at the actual sheet, it's an outline of the adventure, and then it gives you options here and there. But throughout the whole entire sheet, it actually says it's up to the dungeon or the game master to I guess make up scenarios and come up with dialogue and whatnot. So for the most part, it's up to the game master.
And I was actually surprised at that, because I thought, especially with the Maquis dialogue, that you were reading that, but you're making it up as you went along, which is impressive.
Very.
No, I was doing that on the fly.
Yeah, yeah, so amazing. Great. Oh my gosh.
But I have to say, was it on the fly that you vaporized my character, or did it tell you to do that?
Nope, didn't tell me to do that. Believe you me, if you would have rolled better and Amy would, because I was going to give Amy another chance, and it would have been her.
Oh, okay. All right. And I'm sure she would have been brought back by Q as well, right?
Right, because as you guys were doing the dialogue and everything, I was rolling while you guys were doing
that.
Oh,
sneaky.
Yeah.
Because
I thought, was it something I said? What should I have said? Something better? No, it was just the luck of the draw.
Roll of the dice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was totally, yeah.
Wow, how about that?
The dice were in my favor. Good thing I live here in Vegas.
Yeah.
Oh, that's probably why.
You should buy a lotto ticket.
And so Greg Malumpy said, this is a fun listen. Yeah, it took a bit to get going, but once you all got the hang of it, it was really fun. Good work on putting this together. Yeah, great work on putting it together, Richard. And Amy, I think you did a great job. It seemed like at times you're ready to just like take over and run the thing, which is great.
Especially with that survival pack.
Right?
Yeah. That was... Like, wait a minute, I've got my survival pack.
It's got to count for something.
Yeah. So yeah, it did take a few minutes, but we definitely got into it, and listening back to it, I know we had a lot of fun. And yeah, if we do it again, I'm sure like right from the get-go, we'll be into it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then like we said, it was our first time, so it was a little, you know, we didn't quite know what was going on, but I think we figured it out and got into the spirit of it all. So yeah. All right. Well, thank you. And so for today, we are going to talk about our character moments, our favorite character moments from the film First Contact. Now, we've been doing this series throughout, and so we're doing the movies one by one, and we are now to First Contact, which I think everyone can agree is a fantastic movie. I think everyone would put it first on their TNG for favorite movies. So it's going to be interesting to hear what you guys chose out of this movie. So, Justin, how did you make your picks for this movie? And was it any different than how you went in with Generations?
Yeah, I mean, first, I think what I'd say is I think generally people would rate it the highest among the TNG movies, but there are people who prefer the other ones, as maybe especially Generations, what we heard from our feedback last time, but also maybe some Insurrection and Nemesis. But for me, this was extremely difficult because I'm not sure if I put it this strongly on this podcast before, but First Contact is my favorite Star Trek movie out of all 13 movies. And it's also my favorite movie, period, out of any movie that I've ever seen. I just love it so much. And one of the big reasons is one of my picks. I won't give away too much about that, but there are a lot of things about this movie that I love, and I enjoyed so much rewatching it. So my difficulty was narrowing it down to the three choices, because I had a whole bunch as I was watching the movie that I was taking note of. And I mean, I had a bunch for Generations, but it was more for First Contact. It was like, oh, this and this and this and this and this. So it was really hard to narrow it down. Although, again, there's one in particular I absolutely had to choose, and I knew that from the start. But it was kind of it was really difficult for me, probably the most difficult out of any of these favorite character moments, because I had to really think of what I wanted to narrow it down to.
Yeah. Richard, how about you and your process in choosing moments from this great movie?
Well, I actually did the same thing like I did with Generations. I just rewatched it as I tweeted not too long ago, earlier this morning. It was actually the first thing I did this morning besides eat breakfast. I pretty much watched it on my big TV and yeah.
How was it on your big TV? Because you were so impressed with Generations.
So, okay. Generations was great. Don't get me wrong. It was a cinematic marvel. It really is when it comes to, like, you know, sound effects, you know, and all that kind of stuff. They definitely put all the stops for this, for that one. This one, I had a little bit of difficulty.
Oh.
And it was only 4 spots in the whole entire movie. Frame rate was reduced in 3 parts of the movie. Funny enough, they had happened to all deal with Lily. I don't understand why
that
is.
Were you watching it as on the, like, Blu-ray streaming, DVD? How are you watching
Blu-ray? Okay. I have the DVD as well, and I checked it on. I actually checked it on the DVD as well, and it's the same thing on the DVD as well. Which I don't understand why that is, but, like, the frame rate went down.
How do you even notice that? I just have one thing I want to say, because one thing I hear a lot about is things like aspect ratio and frame rate. I never ever ever noticed those things.
And we so can when thank Michael out, like, Schindler for that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it'll be the same experience for you, but it's the scene where Picard meets up with Lily for the very first time, and she's on the Enterprise, and he's talking about the ship. Right when he starts talking about how many planets are in on the Federation, it starts slowing down, and you can steadily see it. It's a very minute.
It must be, because I didn't notice change. That at all. Yeah. Because I think during that scene, I was just watching, like, their faces and their reactions and stuff, but. Maybe, yeah. I'm not as observant about these things, but it's interesting to hear that perspective.
I didn't even notice it until I watched it. I was like, wait a second, why is it slowing down? It's like, I don't, okay. What?
So a technical nitpick.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then, of course, Picard's uniform was all messed up in the very first scene of First Contact when he's in his ready room. He had a blemish on his right shoulder that I really... It bothered me.
Okay, I didn't notice that either.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Otherwise, it was amazing. And just like what I tweeted, it was First Contact is a great movie to you know, crank up your subwoofer to max. Mm-hmm. So my dog didn't appreciate that, but I
listened to it quite loud as well.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into our picks. Justin, let's start with you.
Yeah, so for the first pick, and I don't know, maybe this will be on your list as well. So it has to do with the scene between Picard and Lily in the observation lounge toward the end of the movie, where Picard has made this decision that he's going to keep fighting the Borg, he's not going to set the auto-destruct sequence, and... In order to talk about this, one of the things I noticed in watching this movie, I've always loved Lily as a character, and I think Alfre Woodard is an amazing actor, and what she does in the role is great. But I was noticing, like, the arc of the character, and it's one of the things I think we've talked about a few times when you have a character, you see them in one episode or one movie and never again, and the ability to really develop that character over the course of the movie. So when you first meet Lily, you know, she's there with Zefram Cochrane and, you know, they had been working on the Phoenix or whatever, and then there's this Borg attack. But when she first sees, you know, Picard and Data, she's just, like, very, like, startled, very, like, hostile and suspicious, and that kind of continues for a little while. And then she's taken up to sickbay, and then, you know, she's going through the Jeffries tubes and then meets up with Picard and is still very hostile toward him, right? And thinks that he's part of some other faction or whatever. But then what happens is that Picard is able to take her to this, like, observation area, this part of the ship we've never seen before, where it's like there's just this open window with the force field. And she sees that she can see the Earth and is just astounded by what she sees. and something starts to shift. She's like, okay, something really different is going on here. And it shifts from just being like, you know, I'm the kind of this fighter and hostile to you to, so tell me what's going on and what this future is about. And she's kind of going through and trying to understand things. And then by that time of the scene in the observation lounge, it's gotten to the point where she feels comfortable enough to be able to confront Picard about his decision and to really call him out in a way that nobody else really who is on the ship at that point really wants to. I do wonder if Riker was on the ship, if maybe he would as well. But I mean, it's kind of all to say, like, the arc of her character, you're just being introduced to her at the beginning. You've never heard of her before. And she's really just hostile to everything that's going on and has gotten to the point where Picard can really kind of, he's angry about it, but he can really take in her position and what she has to say. And that scene is amazing. I was just watching it this time. It's just like 10 minutes of two actors just like at the top of their game. And, you know, she's calling Captain Ahab and like all this stuff that like a lot of people wouldn't confront Picard with, and eventually convinces him to take a different path. So I guess overall it's kind of the arc of her character, but it's in particular that scene in the observation lounge, which I think is just really amazing for her character and Picard's as well. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you took mine.
I took one? Yep. Oh, sorry.
I don't know how to talk about it without giving away sort of the theme of all of my picks, but that was definitely one very poignant for Picard's character that I'll talk about a little bit later. But yeah, definitely spot on. And you're right, like, Lily is amazing and courageous, which you sort of have to be, you know, to be building the Phoenix and, you know,
going and survive the Third World War.
Exactly. Right. And so she definitely has this courage and this self-confidence, you know, to look at a situation just as everyone else on the crew and was like, well, everyone's recommending, you know, to blow up the ship, and then why aren't you? So her logic and sort of that perspective, I think, really gives her that self-confidence to go in and say, I don't know who you are, and I don't know this chain of command or anything, but this is what everyone is saying, and everyone really can't be wrong. So definitely a great, great pick and pivotal moment in the movie, I would say.
Oh, thank you. And actually, before we get your comments, Richard, I just wanted to mention one thing, which is that recently I read the novelization of First Contact, which came out at the time of the movie. And that was actually really great because you get some more backstory on Lily and Zefram Cochrane and the things they went through during like the Third World War and getting to build the Phoenix and all of that. So, you know, listeners, if you have a chance to read that novelization, it's really great for that. And having read that before this movie, it just kind of added to that and knowing more about her character. But even if you haven't, I think you can see in the movie what a strong character she is, and that I think that confrontation's great. But what do you think, Richard?
It's a great pick. It really is. Not the direction I was going, but but yeah, it was obviously, you know, it's a very pivotal part of the whole entire movie, and you know, obviously, you know, you could see that Picard goes crazy and then freaking gets reeled back in by this person who doesn't even know him. You know, and it's a great moment for him to come to realization. I mean, he would eventually anyway, but regardless, it's a great scene. It really is, by far.
Oh, thanks. Although as I was watching it, I was like, well, so he sets the auto-destruct, but you know, in the end it gets turned off anyway. But still, I mean, you're right, Richard. She's kind of like reeling him back in so that he can make the right decisions after that, even if that plan to blow up the ship doesn't work out, right? He's a little clearer headed about it, I think.
Like it gets snapped to or something like
that. Snap back. Although, of course, he had to destroy like the little glass case first to vent his anger, but oh well.
And he had to break the Enterprise D.
He broke his little ships. It was sad.
No, it was only one.
Was it? Oh, well, I mean, Lily says you broke your little ships, but is it just one? It's just the D that
I think it was just one because the D was the only one that was on the ground, on the ledge. So
didn't Viridian 3 do enough?
Yeah. Well, it's great. You know, it's a great simile of you know, what had happened before. So
that's true. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you're right.
It is. It's good symbolism that, you know, the D's crashed and that we are now on the E, and yeah, good. All right, Richard, hit us with your first pick.
No, Detroit did not crash. They saved all their lives, including Spot. Your next pick.
Well, like I said, I went in a whole different direction. I was thinking more funny stuff and all that kind of stuff. So that's
I
so
actually
I guess
veered away from the funny stuff because I thought one of you would do it. Yeah.
Okay. Because I mean, there are some really good. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good. You know. Jabs out there, and it's great in this movie. I mean, it truly shows off how much of a great family they are, and you know, and whatnot. So, I just absolutely love it. But my ultimately favorite part is when Picard goes to Worf and asks him about his zero-G combat.
Yeah.
I love that part, and you know, and it brings up a great memory. You know, I can't think of anyone that didn't say it, but like, who didn't cheer when Worf came out with that Borg tourniquet on his
right?
leg?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know anyone that didn't cheer in that whole entire theater, and it was just great. And then of course the line assimilate
right.
this.
I mean, is it really a line if it's only two words? I mean, just so typical Worf.
It's a Worf one-liner.
Assimilate this.
Yeah. And like for the zero-G training, I love when Picard and Worf are on the hull and he's like, how are you doing, Mr. Worf? Not well. But that takes something for Worf to even admit that, right? That he's not doing well. It tells you how much he trusts Picard at that point to even tell him that, right?
But at least he didn't barf in his suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed watching the movie again since you were talking about that, because like when you know, and Picard tells Worf like, well, just keep your eyes, you know, down on the hull. And then you realize we're upside down and the filming of it. I mean, kudos to Jonathan Frakes to come up with that. Like, and we were upside down when we first meet the E as well, sort of that beginning scene. And I just thought, man, we are getting to see this ship in all different angles, and just really appreciated the cinematography of that as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think you're right, Richard. There are a lot of, I actually took some of them out of my list because I knew you guys were going to do funny stuff. But there are funny things, and that's amazing for a movie where, like, the future of humanity is at stake, but there's still funny stuff. And I think that's part of what you get in Star Trek, is that, even in real life, like when things are at their most dire, there might be those funny moments that happen because you have to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good pick.
Okay, so Thanks. Since you took my first pick, Justin, but I'll talk about sort of the theme of what I saw in this movie, where I feel like we get to see in this movie characters sort of losing control. And with Picard having that one moment where we always know him as the diplomat and the one who's logical and the one who's, you know, going to talk his way out of it. And then we see him in the ready room, just lose it. I mean, literally lose it. And I don't think that we've seen him do that to that degree at all. And so for his character arc was so huge. And that got me thinking about other characters and their arcs and them losing it, which we normally don't see. And so my pick will be Drunk Troy. Of course, we knew. But
I left that one out because I thought you might pick that.
Absolutely.
So did I.
Yeah. And listening to Marina talk about it, like she loves Drunk Troy. That's, you know, one of her favorite times of playing Deanna. But I think it's important to note that, you know, throughout the seasons, she didn't really lose control unless she was under some alien influence, right? So this is her and losing control in a different way, right? She is drunk. She's trying to do her job. And Zephram is introducing this stuff called tequila, right, to her. And she's losing control. Time. We don't have time. And it's such a great scene, and her and Riker, and she plays Drunk Troy. So, and she's like, you know, her hand in her hair, which is so, so funny. I've done that. Oh my gosh. When you're drunk. And You know, and she like flips her hair. Well, if you want my professional opinion, you know, she's trying to keep her composure, but she's just so drunk on this tequila stuff. It's hysterical. But I like to see this looser side of her, and that she's, you know, lost control. And I find it so interesting for her character. And the interaction between her and Riker is just amazing. And Riker's look, you know, it's like, what am I going to do with these two? You know, so that's my pick.
Yeah, it's great. And I think I've seen Marina Sirtis say that, like, that scene, it felt more like she was playing herself than
right.
Troy.
Yeah, she said that. Yep.
But no, I mean, the whole part of that where, yeah, you see her where she's maybe not as much in control or different and in this comedic scene is great. But I think also it's interesting later on that you see Troy like in the command center for the launch of the Phoenix, and she's like coordinating all of that stuff. So she's like really competent in that. And I love that they gave that for her to do. But yeah, in that whole scene where she's, I mean, she's the one who's found Cochran and is trying to figure out like what's going on, and this was the way to do it. Yeah, she's just trying to blend in. You're blended, all right.
It's a primitive it's culture. Just
I know, and now
to...
now when I see that, I think of the Primitive Culture podcast on Trek.
Yeah,
that's where the name came from. But yeah, what do you think, Richard?
What was I saying? Yeah. It's a great. I mean, didn't they? I think they only did one take of that, didn't they?
I think that's what I heard they said. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was just one take. Yeah,
she's so brilliant,
which is great.
Yeah. Okay, I can imagine. I can imagine Jonathan Frakes like, okay, Marina, just act like yourself. Go.
Yeah. I was gonna say it doesn't take much acting ability to be drunk, but no, that works. That works. Yeah. But yeah, it's a great scene. Yeah. Also, another one of my critiques. Why does Riker have a reflective strip on his leather jacket?
Again, something I've never thought about. Why does that matter?
He's the only one that has anything.
It's popular in 2063, right?
But he's the only one.
It goes with the beard.
I don't know. Sure.
By the way, the little tangent, but something I think about sometimes when I watch this movie is there's all the Borg stuff going on up on the ship, and meantime, like Riker, Geordi, and Troy are down on Earth, and they have no idea this is going on. So I imagine them being beamed up, and they're like, "Anything happen up here while we were gone? Oh my god!" Like, because they're out of contact, and they don't know what's going on, right?
Yeah,
they got kind of lucky because, like, what do they have to do? They have to, you know, fix up this warp ship and, you know, make sure that Cochran takes the voyage and all that. It's a lot less dangerous there.
I think all three of them would have been assimilated. Just.
Do you mean if they're on the ship?
Yeah, if they were on the ship. I just think
titles, so I doubt that. But
I'm just saying. I mean, they probably, if they would have been on the ship, they probably would have gotten assimilated. I don't know. Because, you know, Riker being up, he'd be up on the front line.
Yeah.
Probably. Getting his butt kicked by the
Borg. Yeah, there should have been a scene where he put his leg up on a Borg that had fallen down. Yeah.
He did the Riker maneuver.
Yeah. Anyway, but I think about that sometimes, and I think that's one of the great things about the movie. It's divided between what's going on the ship and what's going on Earth, and it's very different trajectories, but it all meets up. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Great pick.
All right. Yeah, I don't think it was any surprise to you guys or the listeners.
No.
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 I didn't even put it in my honorable mention because I knew you were going to say something about it.
Yeah. All right, Justin, tell us your second pick.
Okay, so for my second pick, like I said before, this is my favorite movie. And one of the reasons is a character that I love, which is the Enterprise E. So the Enterprise E is my favorite ship that you see on screen in all of Star Trek. I love it because it's sleek, it's elegant, it's incredibly well designed. I think they've kind of this is a period of time after all that you've been through with the Enterprise D. I think that they've figured out that they need something that can, handle hostile situations a little bit more, that it's not all about exploration. And I think as far as we know, there aren't families on the Enterprise E, right? As far as we know. I don't know if they really ever address it, but yeah. It seems like that. Mm-hmm. It's
yeah, well, not in the movies, because I know in the books there are.
Yeah.
They've mentioned it because Renee's on board.
Right. But I think even then, it's not generally like there's lots of families on board. But anyway, so it's a different kind of ship. But I think that makes for like a more streamlined look. And I just love every time I watch this movie, the first time you see it just kind of come out of the nebula. And I think it's just such a beautifully designed ship. And again, it also says a lot about where they are at this point in, you know, the Next Generation, from the series to the movies. It's a little bit less about exploration and a little bit more about being prepared for the hostile situations that they might encounter. And I also love seeing the Enterprise E in the battle scene with the Borg cube. I love the Defiant, and it's great that it's in the movie, but yeah, that scene where it just kind of swoops by and totally dwarfs the Defiant.
Oh, I know, right?
And it's just an incredible ship. So I think, I don't know if before I've chosen like a ship as a character, because this is the first time in TNG that we get like a new ship for our main crew, but I love it so much and I just had to pick it. I mean, for everything also that it symbolizes. So.
Well, yeah. And like I mentioned, like we get to see, yeah, her fighting the Borg, you know, swooping in and taking control, and, you know, the whole scene with the deflector dish, like, yeah. And these new places where Picard takes Lily to see the Earth, you know? So yeah, it's definitely, yeah, I like that.
And you get to see it, I think, in a lot more detail than you did the Enterprise D, I think, especially because those scenes on the hull where they really kind of like swoop in to, so you can see it really close up, which I think you didn't even get some that close up in Generations to the Enterprise D. So For me, it looms large. Like, for me, there are a couple, well, my next pick, which I won't give away, is one of the reasons I love the movie. But I also love it because of, you know, the character moments in the scenes, but also because of the Enterprise E and because of the new uniforms, which are my favorite uniforms in Star Trek. So there's like all these things that come together for me that are my, like, my favorite in Star Trek, and the ship's one of them. Yeah. And maybe the E doesn't rank as highly for you guys among all the ships in Star Trek, but it's number one for me.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. When I first saw First Contact for the very, very first time, it was magnificent. It really is. It's a great looking ship. You know, but I mean, what the way I see the Enterprise E, it's like a battleship. It's slow and sluggish.
I think it's less sluggish than the Enterprise D. I think that thing can look really sluggish sometimes, because it's just like, so there's so many decks and it's so top heavy. The Enterprise E is actually a little bit longer than the Enterprise D, but it's actually,
which is why I say it's sluggish, because
it's not
just
as
like
wide,
just like a battleship.
It's not as wide though. As
wide,
the D.
Well, I'm thinking ships wise, but like, okay. Yeah, I mean, yeah, so I don't know. I like frigates and cruisers that are smaller.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a good choice. I mean, it really is. It's a great looking ship. It really
is.
Yeah,
and so, it does show, I think you're right, you know, that it's less exploration and more being prepared for the threats on Federation and Starfleet. So yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. All right, Richard, what's your second pick?
You know, I like a good action scene, just like anyone else. And I absolutely love when Picard and Lily go into the holodeck.
Oh,
it's my absolute favorite. I mean, obviously we see Neelix, which, you know, I don't know if anyone really noticed that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
Ethan
we saw
Phillips
Neelix
playing that holographic host, I guess, which was cool.
Host, yeah.
To
yeah.
me, that makes and, it, along with seeing the EMH, that makes it like a Voyager crossover. But
even though the EMH Mark I was scrapped, but which I thought, anyway, you'd have to see Lifeline. Yeah.
That happens later. We can argue about that. But anyway, you want to talk about the holodeck scene?
Yeah. So obviously it's Picard whipping out that Tommy machine gun. I absolutely love that. I mean, granted, it would have been a better surprise if that wasn't in the trailer, but I just absolutely love that scene. It's just something, you know, from our era, or actually before, a little bit before our era, and that's placed right into the middle of the 24th century. So, well, 22nd century, but whatever. You know what I mean.
Yeah, that is really fun. And Picard, you know, just being able to think on his feet so quickly like that to, you know, look at the holodeck and disable the safety functions. And I love it where he's like, snaps his finger and is like, oh, wrong chapter, you know? And that's, you know, and I'm glad that you're picking out sort of these lighter moments that's, I think first contact.
Later moment? Anyway, I'll talk about that in a minute.
I think compared to Generations where sometimes maybe the comedy was a little forced because of Data's emotion chip, like this one in this movie, the humor and the comedy are just so natural and just flow within the storyline. Nothing's forced. But just these little, quick little, oh, wrong chapter. It's just so cute. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good pick for sure, Richard. But like what I often take out of, I take two things out of that scene oftentimes, besides the bit of humor at the beginning. The first thing is that like when you see Patrick Stewart as Picard and he has like that Tommy gun and he's like really going at it, like, wow, it's something that I didn't actually expect to see Patrick Stewart doing when I first saw the movie. And he's just like sells it so well because you're used to like Picard, the tea sipping diplomat kind of thing. Right. So he sells that really well. But I actually get kind of disturbed by it because like his plan is basically to kill someone who has become a Borg. I mean, maybe he thought it wouldn't be someone who's a crew member, but he almost doesn't care. And Lily's like, whoa, that was Ensign Lynch there. And he's very much focused on what needs to be done, as he should. But he gets like far too into it. Like this Borg is dead. And he just like wants to keep firing, wants to like take it and like pistol whip him and all this stuff. So I think it's the start of what you see later when Lily confronts Picard, where he's lost control. He's starting to lose control there. And that's a lot of what I take out of it and get a little disturbed by.
Yeah. And which goes to the point, like, which sort of gives her permission, I think, in her mind, because she's the only one to have seen him degrade like
that's
that.
That's true.
Where, yeah, you know, Crusher, we would think, you know, Beverly would have done the same thing, but Beverly hadn't seen that previously in the holodeck.
That's right. Yeah.
And so it lends to Lily being the only one to go in and confront him, you know, because she sort of did there. It's like, whoa, that's enough. He's dead, yeah. You know?
Yeah, because I don't imagine that there's some other scene where Picard goes onto the bridge and he's like, by the way, Dr. Crusher, I just wanted to let you know that I killed Ensign Lynch in the holodeck to get this information and I was about to bludgeon him after he was dead.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't said anything about that, right? It's only Lily that knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, my pick, sort of going along with this losing control theme, is really one of my favorites. And I like quoting it a lot because it's when Data at the end, you know, sort of confesses to Picard, you know, after he does the fires and it misses the Enterprise, Data, and you know, and at the whole time we sort of didn't know, was Data really going to go with the Borg Queen or not? And he tells Picard, you know, well, I thought about it for 0.68 seconds. And for an android, that is an eternity. I love that because again, even in his shortest amounts of time, he loses control. He considers going with the Borg Queen. And I think that is so huge in Data's character development because he's always trying to, you know, figure out humanity and he seems to always have this moral compass. Well, he's programmed, right, to have this moral compass. And here for 0.68 seconds, he considers not following it. And I think that tells a great deal about his character and that we get to see that in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, one of the things I had it as an honorable mention, but I'll mention it now because it relates, is that I think it was an interesting choice that they made for Data to be captured by the Borg and to be in engineering and to have this confrontation with the Borg Queen and the Borg that are in engineering, because you see Data, I think going with your theme, like, he loses control at a certain point, right? Like, against his will, his emotion chip is turned on, and he's trying to cover for it a little bit, but he's very, like, scared and doesn't know what to expect. And also when the kind of skin is grafted onto his arm, he is kind of vulnerable. And when he does his plan to escape, he gets cut, and he was like, ow, you know, like, that really hurt, and I don't like that. And the Borg Queen says, well, rip it off as you would a defective circuit, and Data can't do it. He's vulnerable. He's not in control, except for, like, at the end when he actually changes the firing sequence on the Phoenix. But yeah, I've thought about sometimes, like, oh, was that a good choice to have Data kind of in engineering with this confrontation? But I think it really says something about his character and the struggles that he has, and still trying to figure out what to do with emotions when his emotion chip is on. It kind of carries over from generations. So yeah, I think that's a great pick.
So yeah, and I like it also because when you're saying, like, why Data, like, because the Borg are human turning into, you know, bringing in this technology, and then Data is the mirror of that, you know, where he's the mechanics, and then they're helping him become more organic. And I like that parallelism in the storyline with that. And so that's why I think Data's perfect to be in engineering and confronting the Queen.
Yeah, and he's tempted by that because he's always wanted to be more human, and this gives him the ability to do that. By the way, I think, side note, I think maybe it was in the last Patrons Roundtable where they talked about First Contact a bit, but somebody was saying, like, where did that skin come from? What, it must have been from one of the Starfleet people who became a Borg. And I saw that this time and I was like, ooh. I don't know why. Like, originally I thought somehow they replicated it or something, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you always see them putting on an extra hand or an arm. So they must have, yeah.
Ooh.
That's
gross.
Now,
I'm sorry to introduce that to you, but I couldn't stop thinking about that this time.
Right.
You know, I actually thought that when I was watching it too. I was like, where'd they get that skin from? I was like, but I didn't listen to the Patreon Roundtable. So I was like, oh,
I think that's where it was.
Man.
Like, things kind of mix up in my head. Yeah. So maybe it was a Patrons Roundtable. Maybe it was a different podcast. Maybe it was on Twitter. But somewhere I saw somebody say that, and I was like, that's a really good point.
Well, thanks for bringing it up here, I think.
Sorry. It shall be in your nightmares tonight.
Hey, we could always, you know, fire back and say milk and cookies.
Oh,
I've gotten over that.
Oh, okay.
I'm okay with that now.
Okay.
It's been enough distance.
All right.
And I saw Data's struggle help me to get past that. So.
Okay. Well, let's get to our third round. Justin, your third and final pick.
Well, I think I teased it before, but this third pick is one of the reasons why First Contact is my favorite movie and might always be my favorite movie. And it is... I guess I would call it a character moment for humanity, because it's toward the end where you see the Vulcan ship getting ready to land. And I think that scene is done absolutely perfectly with the combination of the visuals and the music, because everything kind of stops. There's this group of people that are there, and they're just kind of like looking up in awe, like, this, what is this? What's going on? And, you know, they land, and then the Vulcan comes out and meets Zefram Cochrane. And every time that I see that scene, I'm really moved by it. I cry at that scene because it makes me think about one of the reasons why I love Star Trek so much, because it is about a better future. And there's so much strife and so many difficulties in our world, and there has been for a long time, but there's just so many divisions and so many things that happen where people die needlessly, or there's suffering or something like that. And what's being depicted in that scene is the moment when everything changes. And it just really, I get inspired and moved by that, but also sad that we haven't gotten there yet, right? And that, you know, that moment, if it ever happens, could change everything. And I don't know. Sometimes it's hard for me to put it into words, but for me, that is one of the most important scenes in all of Star Trek for me, because it just kind of crystallizes everything I love about Star Trek and the start of that better future, and just like the kind of awe and wonderment and like majesty they put into that moment, I think is just perfect. So I had to have it as my third pick to finish out my top three.
All right, Justin, you just have raided my list, because that was honorable mention.
Oh, sorry.
But no, going, and I was pretty sure you were going to mention it, but I just had it on my list in case you didn't. But yeah, that ending scene, and I think you've mentioned it before, which really stuck with me, like the words that Picard and Lily exchange, you know, just right there at the end where, you know, Picard's like, or she's like, oh, I envy you, or whatever she says, you know, because you're going to go out there back to your, you know, 24th century, well, you know, out into space and exploring. And then Picard's like, I envy you, because she, you're right, at this critical moment and get to shape and form humanity and make it a better place that we all want it to be, is, yeah, to be right there at that groundbreaking moment is very enviable. So it is a very, very good scene. And so you're right, just so Star Trek. Oh, I just love it.
Yeah, no, I want to mention a couple more things about it. I mean, actually, it's good that you brought that up, what happens a little bit later with Lily and Picard talking, because I have it here. So Lily says, you've got to go, I envy you, the world you're going to. And like, as I watch the movie, I'm like, I envy the world that they're a part of too. And, you know, Picard saying, I envy you taking these first steps into a new frontier. I shall miss you, Lily. And I think that says a lot about their character interaction as well, that it's gotten to that point. And that he's talking about, you're going into this new frontier, this new adventure when everything's new. And to a certain extent in the 24th century, I think they kind of take that for granted a little bit, because they've had that their whole lives. But also, like, I think what crystallizes kind of the importance of the moment for me, and I think I may have mentioned this before when we talked about First Contact, maybe it was that crossover on Standard Orbit, but this is the only Star Trek movie that ends at a time period before it began. And I think it's important that they're leaving you there to kind of think of the possibilities. It's not important what happens when the Enterprise E gets back to the 24th century. None of that is important. All that's important is recognizing this pivotal moment in human history and the start of it. And there's even like a little humor in there where the Vulcans get kind of startled by the jukebox and stuff like that. So, but it's just like the start of that kind of partnership that can lead to something better. So I just, again, I love it so much. And like those last like couple of scenes are one of my favorite things in Star Trek. And I think it's very, very inspirational, even to feel like you're living in that moment just for a little bit. Yeah. Richard, any thoughts?
It's a very good scene. That's what I was going to choose as well.
Oh, shoot.
But so I was just actually thinking, and I'm not trying to take anything away from your away from the gravity of the scene, but it reminded me of an episode of Enterprise where, oh, I can't remember who it was. I can't remember who said it, but they were talking about not everyone wants to be like the ideals of Starfleet. Like, not everyone wants to be a part of this greater community. And I was just thinking, it's like, we don't actually see that. We only see one specific point of view, as in assume that everyone else thinks the same thing.
Well, we do see a different version of that in the Mirror Universe and Enterprise, where instead they kill the Vulcan and take the ship, right? I mean, that's kind of an alternate way to
No, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean. But I mean, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about where not everyone's on board with going around the world, galloping around the galaxy, and being space cowboys, as they say. But like, I was just saying, I don't know. I know that it's just, I don't know. I was just thinking that that not everyone wanted to be a part of. It was that Terra Nova episode, I think.
Okay,
it was.
Yeah,
I can't remember. I don't know.
Yeah, where there's a movement of people on Earth that don't really want.
Yeah.
what is it?
But then again, that was before the Federation and all that.
That was
kind
before
of
the
stuff.
Federation, but it was a United Earth at that point, and they had some bones to pick with that, I think. Or with with focus. I'm trying to remember because it's been a while I've seen it. I think they had some issue with spending resources on going out and exploring, right?
Right. Yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if something like first contact with other aliens happen, I just wonder, like, in our world on Earth, what would actually happen? Would it be an inspiring moment, or would it be like deepen certain divisions about what to do about it? I don't know, because it's unprecedented. It's never happened to us. So I don't know. It could go either way. And I mean, I think what you see in some parts of Star Trek that you're referring to is sometimes there are people that are like, is this really the right way to go about things, or should we focus on other things? And I think that makes sense, because people will have disagreements and want to not necessarily do things the way they have been for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good point. Mm-hmm.
All right, Richard, your third pick.
Oh, I already said it. So, but yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess I could say the bar scene. I love the bar scene where I mean, what a great way to start diplomacy than at a bar.
Yes.
Oh, you mean at the end with the Vulcans?
Yeah. He's giving him a drink and everything, which, you know, I would assume that another species has fun and drinks too, or maybe some kind of fun alcohol.
Yeah, they don't know what the Vulcans or whatever. Are like, right?
But I'm sure they do have one at least. I think they do. Do they
have what?
Yeah, yeah, like an alcohol or some sort. Yeah. Yeah,
I think so.
So, I mean, what a great thing to, you know, bond over diplomacy over, and then all of a sudden, loud music.
So. Well, and I love how, you know, Zefram tries to do the Vulcan salute, you know, and can't get his hands to do it. And so he just improvises and just puts out his hands to say welcome, you know. It's like, okay, then, that's your custom. This is my custom. Let's, you know, meet in the middle and, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they actually told him to attempt it, and he's never done it before. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, if it was like,
well, some people can't do it.
Oh no, no, yeah, totally. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, and I like that too, because he puts out his hand, and the Vulcan looks at him, and you can see the wheels turning. Like, should I?
Right.
Oh, all right. I'll just gradually do that. It seems like what they do.
Yeah.
Because it looks like a genuine reaction of, you know. You know, someone first attempting it.
Yeah, it's great. And I mean, I think what's also wonderful about it is that you've had like all of this like drama and tension with the Borg, and it ends on something that's really positive like that.
Yeah.
Like it was all worth it. All the tough things that they went through, all the compromises they had to make, everybody that had to lose control over this and that, it was all worth it because it led to that. To that moment happening again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, since Justin's taken so many of my picks, I'll go to another honorable
mention. You
guys just
should have put these, you know, in the future, you should just think of what I might do and put them earlier.
Yes.
Because I put it third because I wanted to give you guys a chance. Yeah. But there's no way it was going to be an honorable mention.
All right.
Sorry.
So one thing that I just think is really fun is when they're on the planet and Geordi, well, and first of all, everyone is just gushing over Zefram Cochrane, right? And I love that dynamic between it, you know, and Barclay comes up, can I just shake your hand? And, you know, and I like the fact that we get to see Geordi's eyes zoom in and on that metal coil thing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But when Geordi's talking to Zefram Cochrane and it's like, well, I went to Cochrane High School. I mean, and it's just so typical. You know, and he's like, I wish I had a picture, you know, and there's a statue with your arm holding out sort of like this. And, you know, and it just, I can imagine it freaking out.
Imagine if somebody came to you from the future,
right?
and they were like, oh, the things you're going to do, Amy. I went to Amy Nelson High School.
Yeah.
Like, what? Right? Like, totally unexpected.
Yeah. So I like just sort of that interplay with Geordi and Cochrane. And, you know, and he's like, well, do you want to check my warp core equations? You know, and he's like, well, I'm sure they're right, you know, because he doesn't know, you know. But it's just fun to see Jordy gushing a little bit and, you know, being a fanboy. I think that's really cute.
Yeah, I like that too.
You know, there's actually a Marquez High School.
Really?
Yes. Is it an honor? Is it in honor of our dearly departed account Miguel Marquez?
No, but I'm just saying. Okay. I looked it up. I'm like, there's a Marquez High School. Really?
That's cool. Well, you know, you have a much more popular last name than I do.
Wait. Let's see. There's a Nelson High School.
Well, there's the Nelson Monument in England, in London. So I'm just saying.
There you go. You got a
you're related to that Nelson. Yeah.
Lord Nelson.
You guys have more popular last names. Yeah. I doubt that there's any kind of like.
There you go. Nelson High School in Ontario.
Okay. There I am.
I don't know if that counts.
See, I thought you were going to say it's in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh.
And like the whole thing also with Cochrane, I know some people might not like it, especially if they're fans of Cochrane from the original series, but I kind of like that he's not what they expect. He's not like this heroic figure. He's somebody that's had his struggles, which they go into more in the novelization, and he's like, I was just doing this for money, and so I could go to a private island with naked women. And it's like I think there's something about that kind of thing that's like, and I think like if you were to go back in history and like get to know a historical figure, there might be some things that, you know, might not be so admirable, but they did what they needed to do anyway. I kind of like that, even though it's quite different from what you see in the original series, which I like that Cochrane too, but yeah, I think there it is like a little unexpected, because before in Star Trek, whenever you've heard of Cochrane, it's been something very like noble that he did at that time. And this gives a different viewpoint.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like any other leader. Yeah. Like you said, you know,
we're all human beings. We all have our flaws and things where
that's why I don't consider them difficulties. I consider them just being normal, you know, like a normal human being. I mean, who doesn't have a side of them that, you know, maybe some people don't like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, it's just like any other American or any historical figure. I mean, what? Napoleon Bonaparte was short.
I don't think that has anything to do with what you're talking about, but okay.
Yeah, but back in those times, being a short person like that, especially a general, was not a good thing. So
yeah, it was
a sign of weakness. Mm. Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right, Justin, you have any honorable mentions since you're the
I do. I mean, did I take all of your guys' honorable mentions?
Nope.
Okay.
Amy almost did. Okay. But...
But why don't you go first, Richard? Because I have like maybe more than
so. Don't people from the 24th century go
right?
Pee?
I don't detect any leak.
That's great. Yeah.
I absolutely love that. It's just great. It brings it back to today, and it's just great. It furthers making Zevran Cochran a plain ordinary man, and you know, it's just it just makes him normal. I mean, I love it. I absolutely love it. And then on top of that, I love that he still drinks out of a flask. That's even better too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, what, these events are supposed to take place 45 years from now, so that's pretty close to us.
But you'd be drinking if you had someone come down to you and say you're the prodigy of the future, like you're gonna make all this stuff happen, and you get it all at once in one day.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'd be
drinking. Yeah, it's tough to take in.
And I like that scene too, because again, we get to see the power of Geordi's eyes. You know, zoom in and infrared and find him.
You know. You would think that someone in every away team would always have
right?
that. You know what I mean? Like, or at least glasses, like Google glasses or something like that. Or, well,
yeah,
Federation
but
glasses.
But are we able to, see, like, okay, so when you see it and he's zooming in, it looks different than, you know, what we would consider to be like the eyesight that you're born with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but. It again, this goes back to what we were talking about for the visor and why everybody doesn't have a visor. Is it just because it can enhance certain things, but it takes some getting used to interpret it compared to what the eyesight that people are born with?
Well, I mean, I guess that's an different. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, like a contact or something like that, or even it doesn't have to be a visor. I mean, just something like, you know, I mean, that would it'd be a great tool to have.
They should have heads up displays, right? I mean, they should have something that they can just like switch it on and see more than like they normally would.
Or like have a neural interface.
Yeah.
You know, stuck in their head or something like that.
I know. It's in some ways, Star Trek isn't as futuristic about those things as maybe it should be.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if Geordi can see all that, you would think that something like that would be always in every single starship around the Federation.
I could see that.
So, yeah.
Okay, Justin.
All right. So I think we've already talked about a few of them, but one of the things that I noted, now, Beverly Crusher doesn't have too much of a role in this movie.
No.
But as an honorable mention, I wanted to point out one thing that I really like, which is, you know, she's in sick bay. Lily's there. The Borg are about to come in. And I love how she thinks really fast. And she calls up the EMH and she's like, 20 Borg are outside of the door. Do something about it. I'm a doctor, not a doorstop. And by the way, it's great having Robert Picardo in this movie as well. And she's like, just handle it. I'm going this way. But I love how she just thinks quickly, like calls up that diversion, even though for whatever reason she hates the EMH and hasn't upgraded him, maybe, Richard, because of that. But it's like the one thing in the movie where it's a great Crusher moment. And then she's like organizing everybody. Okay, she loses Lily, but she gets everybody else out safely, and nobody gets assimilated from that group as far as we know. So I just wanted to point that out, that I think that's a great character moment from her, and maybe comes from some of her, you know, command training and experience, and maybe even her little stint in command in Descent Part One, you know? So I want to point that out because that's about the only thing that she really does except being in a few of the observation lounge meetings.
I know. It is a little frustrating because Crusher plays more of a role in the seasons than she does in this movie. And this movie is supposed to be, you know, celebrating.
Any of the movies? I mean, I don't think she really has a too prominent a role in any of the movies.
No, I'm saying from the series, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, these movies are supposed to be all of them. And, you know,
I'm not necessarily defending it because I think she should have more. But it's tough when you have, like, seven regulars and, like, a two-hour movie.
Yeah.
To really get them all that they need to.
Yeah.
Whereas with 26 episodes a season, you can be like, here's a Beverly Crusher episode.
Right.
Even though those didn't happen as often as they should. But
yeah, I noticed her lack of character definitely in this movie. And I thought, wow, her only scenes was, leaving the sick bay and her introducing Worf to the bridge.
Yeah.
You know,
Worf is here. Well, and also I always notice it like, oh, she has blonde hair now.
Yeah.
That's like one of the main things I notice. But
yeah. And her hair looks fabulous in this movie. I'm just going to say it. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, good to mention.
No, she should have kept it red.
Yeah. Good to mention Dr. Crusher. Yeah. Richard, another honorable mention.
Nope. That was it. I didn't have another one.
I've got another one. So we've talked about Picard and Worf a little bit, but I love the little confrontation where Picard calls Worf a coward, and then Worf says, if you were any other man, I'd kill you where you stand. I mean, I think, first of all, it's just great to see them like butt heads like that. But second of all, it says exactly how much respect that Worf has for Picard and everything he's done for him over the course of the seasons, that he is like the only exception that he wouldn't kill someone where they stand just for that. And I, you know, Worf would do it, I think, if he didn't respect him that much. Boy, that would be quite a terrible alternate movie. Worf's like, shoop, just kills Picard. Oh boy. But later on, what I like as well is that after Picard and Lily have that confrontation in the observation lounge, Picard comes to Worf and, you know, says that he regrets some of what he said. And I love that Worf says some. but you know, Picard goes on to say he thinks he's the bravest man he's ever known. So like I think like the relationship that Picard and Worf have and what Picard has done for Worf, you know, with taking him before the High Council and Sins of the Father with the discommendation and all of that stuff. And I think it's great, and it just kind of builds more on that relationship. And and how much respect that they really have for each other, and that we can get that even when he's mostly at Deep Space Nine. So, yeah, I just had to call it out because I love that interaction.
And then probably I wasn't even going to mention it, but we can't do this podcast without mentioning Picard's famous line. A line must be drawn here. Come on.
This far, no farther.
Yes. They push back, or they push and we fall back. No further.
No further?
No further. Oh, I love that. And I say it to my kids when they start pushing me, my students, and then they don't get it. And I just shake my head.
By the way, Amy, have you gotten into the part of DS9? I forget which episode it is where Quark does his tribute to this line.
To the who?
There's actually a scene. Oh. Yeah, to this line where I forget which episode, but he says, the line must be drawn here, this bar, no further.
No, I haven't. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm going to look for that.
It's
awesome.
But yes, that is a great line, and it's part of that whole scene with Picard and Lily. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, let's get to your final thoughts. Richard, let's start with you.
Well, like I said, you know, this movie was great on a 65-inch plasma TV, so it's great. The sound was even better. That's for sure. It's got lots of interesting sounds to it, and you know, obviously the dialogue is great and whatnot. But I mean, for the most part, besides the fallacies of the frame rate and you know, Riker's reflective one stripe on his left shoulder.
My goodness, Richard, that is such a small nitpick, I have to say.
But, I mean, it's different from everyone else. If someone else had like a spot or something like that or whatever, then that would be different. But it just bothered the hell out of me when I looked at it. And funny enough, I noticed it first when I was watching the drunk scene. So it's a fantastic film. I absolutely love it. I mean, When I normally do rewatch, I typically ignore all the Borg stuff and everything and just skip to the battle scenes is what I usually do. So, but yeah.
What? You skip to the battle scenes?
Justin's a little defensive over this movie.
I'm the only one here who thinks it's their favorite Star Trek movie. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Oh, I got something to tell you about when we do Nemesis, Amy, but we'll go into that later.
Okay. Anyway. By the way, what is your favorite Star Trek movie, Richard?
Wrathicon.
That would be the latest one.
Oh, Beyond.
Beyond.
That's your favorite of all of them? Oh, cool.
Yep.
Oh, I love it, but it's not quite my favorite. Nice, though.
Yep.
And Amy, like, I have to, like, before I go into my final thoughts, just settle this. Is Nemesis your favorite Star Trek movie, or is it something different? Because I think you said it was something different.
Well, for the TNG, it really is. I know. Send me hate mail later. But
I think our listeners have come to respect.
Okay. But no, I really do enjoy 09 and Beyond. And so I guess when I rate or list movies or whatever, I think about what is it that I would watch right now. And so that's how I make that judgment call. So, and it's willing to change whenever I did that last thing on Twitter. And I was like, this is subject to change within 30 seconds. Cause this is just what I'm feeling right now.
You put an asterisk next to it.
Exactly. So I wanted to do my final thoughts on First Contact. And just sort of summarize like the picks that I had for Picard losing control, Troy losing control, and Data losing control. And I think it is something that separates First Contact from the other movies, because I don't think we really get to see that much character development and get to see how they react when they aren't in control. And I think that says a lot about a character. And they go through, I think, some serious pause in their characters and that we get to see them and their interactions with each other. I love the movie. I think they're, like I said before, the humor and the comedy is just seamless. It's so, it just blends into the storyline. And there's so many picks we could have had, you know, I mean, this just would go on and on, but I like seeing the characters on the big screen and their interactions and that they get to overcome some difficulties that they have. And I think with the next gen, the Borg being the largest foe and enemy for our next gen crew, that we get to have this, you know, movie to summarize all that we've experienced in the series. So I love First Contact. It's definitely one that I'm always willing to watch no matter when. All right, Justin, your final thoughts.
Okay. Also, before my final thoughts, so I looked it up. That Quark quote is from the DS9 episode, The Dogs of War, which is toward the end of season 7. You'll get there.
Oh,
you'll
seven.
Laugh. You'll laugh.
Okay.
You'll laugh when you hear it.
Okay.
So anyway, my final thoughts. I mean, as I said several times, this is not only my favorite Star Trek movie, it's my favorite movie. So I was looking forward to this probably the most of any of the favorite character moments episodes so far. And as I said, I think there were tons of things. And I think we talked about a lot of them. Unfortunately, I stole some of your guys' picks. Sorry about that. But I mean, just in thinking about the things that we've picked. So, you know, several of them involved Lily, who's a character who's only in First Contact, and I like when we don't just do it all based on the main characters. Also, I picked a ship and a moment that was like for humanity. So I think there's some great things that develop certain characters that are a little unusual. And I also like that we talked about the humor in the movie, which despite being a very serious movie, there's humor. I love, Amy, that you brought out this theme of people losing control, because I hadn't thought of it that way. And I think it's really great that it has that. And I think you're right, not so much the other movies. And just bringing out really great moments involving Picard and Worf and Data. And we even had one there for Crusher and Troy, of course. I think it's interesting we didn't pick anything for Riker. I mean, but maybe he doesn't have as much because Jonathan Frakes is directing the movie. But I think it was pretty well distributed, and it was fun to talk about all these moments. I'll be interested from listeners, because I think we did talk about a lot of the movie, if they have ones that they love that we didn't mention. But yeah, it was just a lot of fun, and I was looking forward to this so much. And I am looking forward to Richard next month being forced to pick things from Insurrection, which does exist.
The movie that shall not be named.
No comment from Richard.
Yeah,
no comments.
But anyway, this was fun. We can bask in the glory of this before the awkwardness of the next one.
Yes. All right. Well, let's tell our listeners about what we're going to discuss next week. And when we, I mean you, Justin.
Yes, Amy, you and Richard are out next week. And so I've convinced a couple of people to come by as guests. That would be Dan Gunther and Bruce Gibson from Literary Treks. And they will be here talking about the pets of TNG. Now, you might be saying, what is there to talk about maybe besides Data's cat Spot? But there's more. We'll find things. It'll be fun. Don't worry. But I think they're looking forward to that topic, looking forward to having them on the show, because I think they've been on... Actually, they were on together when we did the Picard series announcement. Weren't they both there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
Yep.
But this is the opportunity to just talk to them about something. So I'm looking forward to that. Hope you'll join us and, you know, maybe also think about any pets that you have that have been named after TNG pets.
Yes, there are quite a few of you out there, listeners, I know.
Or regular characters, because I know people do that.
Yes.
They'll have, like, you know, their cat Worf or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, that'll be fun next week.
All right. Well, it's been so much fun talking about our favorite character moments from First Contact, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, continuing mission.
You know, another production. And now...
Another fourth, I guess.
Yeah, but now they are. And that in itself seems to me to be laying the the roots or the basis for something that could grow bigger sometime in the future. I mean, let's get this one out of the way and then see where it goes from there. But now you have a collective.
Earl Grey.
Detecting Romulan life forms. Oh, sorry. Did you say there are Romulan life forms?
Yes. No, I said there used to be. So
used to be Romulan
you detect
life
fate signs.
What if you guys created?
Yes.
Okay. So there are life forms. Interesting. Fascinating.
Was
life forms.
They're gone now, but there was traces of life forms that were present at the shuttlecraft.
Oh my goodness. Dead Starfleet officers, dead Romulans. This isn't really helping much, is it?
Standard orbit.
This episode is emblematic of how it wanted to grab the bull by the proverbial horns and wrestle those kinds of issues to the ground and serve as an example of where a certain subset of people stood at the time in trying to react to the craziness of their own world. And that's one of the things that I just continuously love about this show.
The 602 Club.
And that's the thing. I think you need a movie like this because most of the time when we think about astronauts and these heroes who do these extraordinary things, we're painting with a very broad brush. Even in The Right Stuff, which, like I said, it at least gives you some differences in the personalities of those guys, this is like, you know, this masterclass in this psychology of this one particular person.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find all our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Richard, where can people contact you when you're not cosplaying as Captain Ahab?
I don't know. What would be my white whale?
I don't know. A Klingon enemy? Maybe? You know what? It could be a mashup. It could be like Worf as Captain Ahab. Mm. Maybe fighting something. Anyway,
I don't think I could get that past the Comic-Con security with whatever whale
spear.
The harpoon?
Harpoon. There you go.
Listeners, don't try that at home.
Yeah, please don't. There's already enough security there. Anyway, well, you guys can find me on Facebook. I pop in here and there on the Babel Conference. And recently, I've been on Twitter, and my handle is xransom. So,
yes,
prepare
you've been
for
more,
sporadic
you've been more
use.
Yeah.
I know. I was looking at it. I was like, I haven't seen it since, I haven't touched it since July. Oh. So I was like,
What? You've missed so many great things that people have said about you.
Yeah.
You saw a few of them. There were good things people said about you as the game master. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe that was me and Amy, but still it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not running the command center to launch the Phoenix?
Oh, I would love to do that. When I'm not doing that, you can find me here on the network. I co-host The Edge, which is about Star Trek Discovery with Patrick Devlin. I am also on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and I am on the Babel Conference. So Justin, where can people contact you when you're not imagining first contact with the Vulcans?
Well, I'm doing that quite a bit. But let me ask this question. So Amy, maybe next year at STLV, you can cosplay as Command Center Troy.
Ooh.
That would be cool, right?
Yes, that would.
Just a thought. I haven't seen anyone cosplay that. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, tweeting out my Season 6 rewatch of The Next Generation. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norma Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, and Thomas Appel. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
I envy you, taking these first steps into a new frontier.
Assimilate this!
Time! We don't have time!